Hi, it's Mountain Edition, all the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Zoe Rome, and I'm thrilled to be here with Wyatt Orme.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Wyatt. It's been a challenging and emotional week for many in the Roaring Fork Valley. The Lake Christine fire started on the evening of July 3rd and continues to burn over 6,000 acres, displacing hundreds of people in Basalt and El Jebel. Now, all mandatory evacuations have been lifted and the fire is 49% contained.
We have stories from the field as we look back at the fire and other news from this past week,
including interviews with State House reporters on what to expect now that primary elections are over.
Also, two more environmental groups have settled with Aspen in a controversial water rights case.
The biggest stories from this week from the Lake Christine fire and more coming up on Mountain Edition.
Hundreds of firefighters have been battling the Lake Christine fire. On Tuesday, residents gathered in El Jebel to say thanks. Kristen Kay was there and brings us this report.
Crown Mountain Park is usually a pretty popular place on summer evenings. But tonight, the sidewalk is lined with people cheering and holding signs as fire trucks drive in. Firefighters wave shyly. Some are recording videos on their cell phones. Residents have come out in droves to say thanks in person to the firefighting personnel. Patricia Peterson just returned to her home in Basalt after being evacuated.
I just am so grateful to all the people that helped. I mean, forever indebted to them. And we were lucky, just lucky. But it's because of the firefighters, totally.
At one point this week, nearly 600 firefighters were working to contain the fire. Crews from all over the West joined local firefighters in their efforts, which protected homes and businesses in Basalt and El Jebel. Incident managers say that people can also drop off thank you notes to firefighters and their families at the Eagle County Community Center. Kristen Kay, Aspen Public Radio News.
While fire has dominated the news this week, there are also lots of developments in water. The city of Aspen has reached an agreement with two more environmental groups that opposed its water rights on the Castle and Maroon Creeks. Elizabeth Stewart Severy has more.
American Rivers and Colorado Trout Unlimited announced that they have signed an agreement with Aspen to move the city's rights to build reservoirs out of the two scenic valleys. Aspen faced opposition in state water court from 10 parties and has reached settlements with seven of those, including environmental groups, private landowners, and Pickin County. The most recent agreements echo the city's earlier commitment to work to move the storage rights to new locations, which could include land it purchased last year in Woody Creek, the Aspen Golf Course, and Cozy Point Ranch. Aspen will have to file a new case in state water court to change the location. In a press release, officials with American Rivers and Trout Unlimited praised this as a step to protect rivers and the fish who call them home. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Now that the primary election is over, Colorado voters can expect a heated run-up to the general election. The candidates are set, except for the Democratic nominee for Attorney General.
Benta Berkland spoke to State House reporters about that race and the gubernatorial candidates.
I'm here with Joey Bunch of Colorado Politics and Jesse Paul with the Denver Post. Democratic Congressman Jared Polis and Republican State Treasurer Walker Stapleton will face off in the governor's race. Joey, two very different candidates.
Absolutely. You know, voters are going to know what they're picking in November. A year ago, we were expecting it to be Jared Polis and Walker Stapleton. Now we've got Jared Polis and Walker Stapleton. Jared has staked out a beachhead on the left, and Walker Stapleton has done the same thing on the right. But there's this vast ocean of unaffiliated voters in the middle. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manage their messaging from here to November to reach those unaffiliated, presumably moderate voters.
Already they're trying to distinguish themselves from each other. It seems like it's going to be pretty divisive, a lot of money, and then we have whatever's happening federally that could impact this race.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. The oil and gas industry is just going to back a dump truck full of money up to Colorado and dump it in this race because they see Jared Polis as an existential threat. Now, Jared Polis can write million-dollar checks out of his own bank account, but he's also got a lot of wealthy liberal friends that can do the same. So, you know, I wouldn't watch a lot of television between now and November if you don't like attack ads.
stick to Netflix and Amazon. Jesse, we have other statewide races as well, such as the Attorney General. What are going to be some of the big issues there for voters? And do you think the Attorney General's race is going to be centered on mostly just Colorado issues, or do you think what's happening nationally could impact it?
Well, the Democratic primary for Colorado Attorney General is really fascinating because you had two very differing styles of governing. You had one liberal academic from Boulder, a University of Colorado law professor, versus Joe Salazar, kind of a fiery state legislator who's known for making these incendiary comments, and their styles were completely clashing. The one thing that they both kind of agreed on was this pushback against the Trump administration and vowing to run campaigns and, if elected, really be a rebuke for the White House from Colorado. The way that they wanted to do that was so different, and voters had an interesting choice between that. It was a really fascinating money battle, a battle of ideology, a battle of name ID. But I think when you're looking ahead to this general election for George Brockler, it's going to be really fascinating to see that Trump rebuke theme play out here. Democratic attorneys general have played such an important role in pushing back against the White House. It'll be interesting to see if Colorado voters want to go that route.
And Republican George Brockler didn't have a primary. He's known for being the prosecutor in the Aurora Theater shooting. How closely do you think he's going to tie himself to Trump?
That kind of remains to be seen. He's put out an ad already that didn't even suggest that he was Republican. And then when the Republican Attorney General's Association came in immediately after the primary and dropped an ad on George Brockler's behalf, it didn't suggest he was a Republican as well. So to me, it doesn't seem like he's going to, at least in the immediate term, be tying himself to Donald Trump. I think that would be kind of dangerous for him. It would maybe scare some unaffiliated voters away. So far, Brockler's kind of positioning this race as him being experienced versus whoever the Democratic nominee being inexperienced. So voters, again, will have this really interesting choice between two very contrasting styles.
We had highest turnout in the state history for this primary. Unaffiliated voters participated for the first time, but more of them chose to vote in the Democratic primary versus the Republican. What does that mean? Are Democrats more energized, or what are some of those other factors, and how do you think that may play out this November?
I think that's exactly what it means. And, you know, I went back and looked, and normally in midterm elections, Democrats don't vote that strongly in Colorado, but boy, they sure did this time. I think there were 100,000 more Democrats that voted. Now, granted, the Republicans didn't have quite as competitive a race at the top of the ticket. But, you know, unaffiliated voters, they didn't turn out in huge numbers either. But they tended to lean toward Democrats. So if I'm a Republican, I'm concerned about that for November.
I think when you take into consideration the fact that the unaffiliated voting bloc is the largest in the state, and they lean towards Democrats, or at least voted in the Democratic primaries, I think that Walker Stapleton could be in trouble because of his embrace of Trump. I don't know if he's going to walk that back come the midterm election, but he's certainly going to have to figure out a way in order to speak to those unaffiliated voters if he wants to win the general.
Jesse Paul with the Denver Post, Joey Bunch with Colorado Politics. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Wyatt Orm. And Zoe, listeners tuning into Mountain Edition obviously want to stay in the know about local news.
Absolutely. And they can also stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and the community by liking our Facebook page and following us on Twitter at Aspen Pub Radio.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
We'll continue to update our feeds with information and photos from the Lake Christine fire.
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook.
As the Lake Christine fire continues to burn, smoke has many residents worried about air quality. Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports on air quality concerns and what residents can do to protect themselves.
I'm here with reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy, who has been following air quality connected to the fire. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Kristen.
So we've heard there are health risks associated with the smoke and the ash. What is most affected?
Well, the lower valley is most affected right now. I just spoke with Jeanette Whitcomb, who is Aspen's air quality expert. She compared smoke to water, so it will follow drainages, and it's also impacted very much by wind. So right now we're seeing health advisories in Eagle and Garfield counties connected to smoke. And while Picken County's air quality is impacted, it's not as severe. Those health advisories are updated every 24 hours, sometimes more often if conditions are changing rapidly. If you have a question, basically if you're feeling the impacts of smoke, you might want to limit your exercise and your activity. People can also follow kind of a general rule that deals with visibility. If you can see less than a mile, that's a sign that smoke could impact health, and less than 5 miles is sort of a first red flag.
So how can kind of the smoke and the ash in the air impact someone's health?
You might be noticing that it's more difficult to breathe and feel kind of a burn in your lungs and chest. It can also cause headaches, and people listening right now might be feeling it in their eyes, like dry, itchy eyes. People with cardiac or respiratory conditions are most susceptible. It can trigger those conditions, like asthma or a variety of cardiac conditions. Other sensitive groups include elderly people who might be more susceptible to bronchitis, children because they breathe more frequently and take deeper breaths often, and also pregnant women. So smoke has very tiny particulate matter in it called PM2.5. Those particulates are so small that it can actually pass into your bloodstream. So those sensitive groups really want to be aware.
How can people limit the impacts of this smoke exposure?
The first step is to limit exposure to the smoke. So things like closing windows and doors, and don't exercise in these conditions. If you're concerned, air filtration systems are an option that you can use indoors. You can get a room-sized air purifier for about $100, and that can help you feel comfortable sleeping or breathing. And if you are in those sensitive groups, it's a good idea to look into getting an air purifier. Those need to be HEPA certified, I'm told. Those filtration systems are really taxed. If you leave windows or doors open, they can't keep up with the filtration. So put a filter on an air conditioner if you have one. Otherwise, you know, try to balance comfort and heat with making sure that you're limiting the opportunity for smoke to get inside, and stay inside if you can.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
Save the Mid-Valley is a group in the Basalt area, and they're suing Eagle County for approving the tree farm development. As Wyatt reports, they argue the approval violates Colorado's constitution.
The tree farm will be 340 residential units and over 100,000 square feet of commercial space across Highway 82 from Whole Foods. The Eagle County Board of Commissioners approved the development with many conditions. One was this: when a property is sold at the tree farm, 1% of the price goes to Eagle County's general fund. Save the Mid-Valley filed a brief in district court Monday, arguing that money is technically a tax and one prohibited by Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or TABOR. The group is hoping a judge will agree and will rescind the county commissioner's approval. Eagle County has several weeks to respond with counterarguments.
Low water levels and high temperatures are stressing fish in the Roaring Fork Valley.
As Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports, experts are asking anglers to stop fishing in the mid-afternoon.
Data collected through the Roaring Fork Conservancy shows that temperatures on the lower Roaring Fork and Colorado rivers are reaching levels that can stress fish to the point where they can't recover if anglers pull them out of the water. This happens as water warms through the mid-60s. Because of low flows during this drought, recent temperatures on the Colorado have been as high as 75 degrees. So the Roaring Fork Conservancy has teamed up with local fishing groups and Colorado Parks and Wildlife to ask all anglers to stop fishing between 2 p.m. and midnight, when temperatures peak. If temperatures continue to rise, CPW could close fishing access to some streams and rivers. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
The Lake Christine fire has threatened the safety of Valley residents. It's also threatened their health. Wyatt reports on what hospitals have been seeing since the fire started.
Valley View Hospital in Glenwood Springs said Tuesday it has treated 4 patients with needs related to the Lake Christine fire. None were life-threatening. During the first few days of the fire, the Lung Center at Valley View was receiving 10 to 12 calls each day from people having trouble breathing from the poor air quality. This week, daily calls have dropped to less than 5. The hospital says there's an increase in refills on inhalers and other respiratory supports. Roaring Fork Practice in Carbondale is, too, experiencing an increase in both calls and visits.
For centuries, humans' relationship with animals has been related to use and utility. Scientists are now delving into more complex understanding of our fellow creatures. And as reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy found, seeing birds of prey up close offers a chance to appreciate both the evolutionary science and the emotional beauty of raptors.
So I want you everybody to watch that hawk's head.
Kin Kittigua stands about 100 yards away from a Harris hawk on the Aspen Institute campus. He whistles.
Come on.
It only takes about 2 seconds for the hawk to soar across the meadow, and the crowd releases a collective exhale as it reaches its talons to perch on Kittigua's gloved arm.
It still amazes me to come back.
Kittigua is a master falconer, and he was here as part of the Ideas Festival, where a series of lectures and discussions focused on the genius of animals. He showcased 4 birds of prey, the Harris hawk, a peregrine falcon, a great horned owl, and the iconic bald eagle. Through his organization, Hawk Quest, Kittigua teaches adults and kids about birds of prey. And he's clear, these are not pets.
They're a being of their own, you know. They're just allowing me to be part of their life, if you will.
Nature's given the raptors some other interesting tools. I call them adaptation.
Kittigua and his team bring each bird in front of the crowd, and he highlights the superhuman qualities that these birds possess. Raptors can see their prey from hundreds of yards away. He shows how the owl can rotate his head 270 degrees and in total silence. He points out the unique beak adaptation that allows peregrine falcons to dive at speeds up to nearly 250 miles per hour and breathe while doing it. But the most powerful part of his demonstration is when the audience gets to see the Harris hawk up close in flight. For Lynn Cassetta, who's visiting from Westport, Connecticut, it's an emotional experience.
Didn't it take your breath away? I mean, I was 3 inches away from that beautiful bird. You know, and that's kind of a life-changing thing.
Carl Safina understands this feeling of wonder in the presence of the raptors.
They are incredibly beautiful. They make life beautiful for us.
Safina is an ecologist and a professor of nature and humanities at Stony Brook University. And he says that beyond this beauty, the science is clear that we actually have a lot in common with animals, especially other vertebrates, which have nervous systems that are nearly identical to our own.
They have all the same neurotransmitters. They have all the same hormones that drive mood and motivation. And they exhibit behaviors that are very logical.
These similarities lead Safina and others to believe that our relationship with animals needs to evolve. Now, he contends, most of our contact with animals comes through raising them as food. But demonstrations like this one can change that, help people understand a different perspective.
Animals are of this world as much as we are, and their right to exist and to have lives is equivalent to ours. And so what we really need to do, because we are endangering so many and really pushing them off the face of the planet, is to leave room for them.
The birds at this demonstration are evidence of that need for wild space. The owl was hit by a car and can't be released into the wild because of a broken left wing. The bald eagle is in perfect physical condition. When a handler brings her in front of the crowd, there's a collective gasp. This raptor is regal and commanding, a large female with strong muscles and sharp eyes. Kittigua explains that she was rescued as an eaglet after a hunter illegally killed her parent, and she grew accustomed to life with humans.
She belongs in the wild. Unfortunately, she'll never make it, because if she did get released, or let's say she gets away from us and you're down there having a barbecue, she's going to come down and join you. Okay?
So instead of a life in the wild, this bald eagle makes a case for others, working to build connections. And those ties are clear, Safina says. We share so much with animals, from the chemistry of our nervous systems to motivations and desires.
We try to stay alive. We try to keep our children alive. We have to find food. And we are all literally related to one another.
And demonstrations like Kittigua's are able to help illustrate these connections. He brings raptors down to earth and gives people a chance for a close look at what unites us with our wild cousins. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Zoe Rome. In other Aspen Public Radio news, the feds are looking for public input on 2 pieces of land outside Carbondale. And evacuees from the Lake Christine fire returned to their homes after passing through police checkpoints.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org.
When evacuees from the Lake Christine fire were able to return to their homes last week, many had to pass through police checkpoints. Police needed to cut down on crowds and prevent theft from abandoned homes.
Luke Boyer's driver's license is a little old.
That doesn't have the current address, but okay. They said my lease would work.
Yep, your lease is perfect.
He's standing in a bus, operated by Eagle County, that's parked at the Basalt High School. He hands a copy of his lease to Amanda Bay from the county. She gives Boyer a little green card to show police so he can get home to Old Town Basalt. Boyer was evacuated last Wednesday because of the fire danger. Amanda Bay estimates the county has issued 1,500 or so of these little cards to people like him. Bay has been in the area doing this work since Saturday.
We're the ones that are validating through utility bills and leases.
It's not a perfect system. People don't always have the proper documentation, so she has to get a little creative.
Ask certain things about the house, like, can you tell me when it was purchased? You know, that type of thing.
Once she confirms their identity, they're good to go. As of Monday afternoon, 30 homes are still under evacuation. Residents of the remaining 600 or so homes that were evacuated can now return. As firefighters gain control of the Lake Christine fire, residents are picking up the pieces. They're unpacking their go bags, sweeping ash from their doorsteps, and checking in on their neighbors. For some, the emotions of the past week may just be sinking in. Last Sunday, the Art Base in Basalt offered a free Art, Healing, and Hope class to help residents relieve stress and start to heal. Arts and culture reporter Kristen Kay attended to see how community members used art to process their experiences during the fire.
Smoke and haze filled the air. Basalt Mountain is still smoldering. There's a constant hum of helicopters delivering water to hotspots. And Sherry Gaynor is hunting through cabinets for the best tools she knows of to help people in times of crisis.
I'm looking for the good watercolor brushes.
She admits that she feels a little rattled this morning. She's been volunteering at the Basalt Shelter, doing art projects with kids who were evacuated. And the Lake Christine fire brought back the worry and uncertainty she felt during Glenwood Springs coal seam fire in 2002, when she had to leave her home. Last week, when wildfire whipped through Mid-Valley's mountains, she knew she had to help.
When I got up at 12:30 and just said, I have to do something, when I saw, I was just like, I don't care. I'm not waiting for an invitation.
10 participants trickle in as Gaynor finishes setting up. Some apologize for being a little late, but Gaynor understands that normal schedules have been disrupted.
Hi, welcome. No worries.
Gaynor starts class by acknowledging the impact that the Lake Christine fire has had on the community.
You know, it's been a rough time in our valley, and I know many of us have had friends and loved ones who were under threat.
She goes on to explain that attendees can use collage, paint, and journaling to help them work through the stress of the past few days. Basalt resident Diane Argenzio has the day's paper set out beside her. She's cutting out pictures of the fire on the front page. She is one of the people who came in a little late. Just this morning, she re-entered her home after being evacuated.
And Wednesday, I left my house at 9 in the morning, and at 9:30 at night, it was the 4th of July, my neighbor called and said, you better get home. We're getting out of here. The fire came over the hill.
Argenzio doesn't know quite what she's feeling right now.
So it's been like living in this weird dream of seeing this devastation and the intensity. I mean, my God, these planes and everything they've been doing, and it's right where I live.
She almost didn't come today, but she knew that making art was what she needed. She's cutting out newspaper photos of firefighters.
You know, I want to remember this. I mean, not that I would ever forget, but I want to deeply remember the gratitude that I have and the courage that some people have that I just can't fathom.
Another attendee this morning, Deanna Morales, lives in Carbondale. On the 4th of July, she went with her family to Glenwood. She returned that afternoon.
And after that was chaos, just checking every report, every news, calling my friend, like, are you okay?
She packed her bags, preparing for the worst. And that process of scanning her house, looking for what to take, made her think about what was really essential.
Albums, pictures, you know. And the stuff was like, I saw like my TV, I saved money for the stuff. Like, doesn't matter.
She kept her bags by the door just in case and feels lucky that she didn't ever have to throw them in her car to run from the fire's path. But she's still terrified for the whole valley. She calls everyone here her family. She's hoping making art today helps her relieve grief and fear.
We try like, don't cry, don't feel bad, because other people are feeling worse, but in some point, like, we have our own stuff. Maybe it's not bad, but we need to be aware of that, not just keep them inside.
Gaynor tells the class that longtime residents of the Roaring Fork Valley have seen regeneration and new growth after devastating fires. She says it's a metaphor for trauma and healing.
There can be suffering, and at the same time, there's great beauty. For me, in this week that we've just experienced together, the outpouring of love and really the human spirit. And it really is why I think we all live here.
And like those green shoots that will eventually emerge from the ash on the hillsides, these Roaring Fork Valley residents have the art they're creating today as a visual reminder of resilience. Kristen Kay, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
Colorado Mountain College is bracing for flat or even declining enrollment this coming school year, as Wyatt reports a strong economy is to blame.
As a general rule, when the economy is good, people go to work, not school. At least not community colleges or other open access schools like CMC. Matt Gianeschi, CMC's chief operating officer, says with a 2% unemployment rate, the college needs to be careful not to expand course offerings. He says in the grand scheme of things, students who choose work over school are typically older, not ages 18 to 22. CMC's Board of Trustees approved a $68 million budget last Wednesday. It anticipates the enrollment trend, but gives CMC employees a 3% cost of living raise.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Zoe Rome.
And I'm Wyatt Orme. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and national and international news on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
We'll have ongoing coverage of the Lake Christine fire online and on our social media feeds. Aspen Public Radio is many voices, one valley, and we'd like to hear your story. Come by the City Market in El Jebel this evening and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. and share your stories of the Lake Christine fire. We'll collect those stories on our website so you can hear the voices of your neighbors.
If you can't make it to City Market, come by our station at the Red Brick in Aspen. You can also email a voice memo to news@aspenpublicradio.org or leave a voicemail at 970-633-0814. That number is 970-633-0814. And thank you to everyone who has shared their story so far.
And thanks to all those listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.